Welcome to the Tea Grannies. I'm Maria.
And I'm Melise. Today we're here to chat about romance for beginners. So pour yourself a cup of tea and let's get started.
So romance, aka the most popular genre ever. So I remember an agent at a conference saying not to look down on romance writers. They're the ones rolling up in expensive sports cars for meetings with their agent. So why is it so popular? It's certainly a form of escapism in a more predictable way than fantasy is, because you know what you're getting when you pick up a romance. And so what it really boils down to is human connection. And that's why it's so effective across all genres, not just on its own.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Yes. I like to think that, you know, fantasy is predictable, but when you really get into it, like all the different things you can do with world building and stuff, you don't really know what you're getting into until you dive in. Whereas romance, like, there is a formula. And if you're a romance writer and you know what you're doing, you know the formula. So I don't know the formula, and maybe that's already obvious. Maria is going to be in the driver's seat for this one, for most of this one. I'll probably talk too much because that's just what we do. But when it comes to romance, I'm the first person to admit it's not – straight up romance is not my thing. Like, I don't go looking for romance novels at the bookstore, and I don't consider myself a romance writer, but I do like – love stories. And I like to write love stories for my characters. It's just never the main focus. And it's not something that I strive to include if it isn't going to fit. So I try to make sure that it's actually, you know, relevant or necessary, or the characters should have good chemistry before I decide that they're going to be together. Because I tried starting a story by saying, I know these two characters are going to get together. They didn't get together. I had to go with somebody else. So I feel like I can't predict those things. But that said, like I said, I do enjoy when books have romance in them. I'm also not going to be upset if they don't. I know people that are just like, there was no love story in this, and I'm really disappointed because I wanted to get the warm fuzzies and I didn't. And that's very sad. But yeah, it doesn't necessarily bother me. If there's brief hints of a love story happening, but it never takes much of a role in the story, I'm all for it. I'm good. It's probably a fantasy, and I'm more interested in the world building anyway.
Yeah, for fantasy, I like romance to be like an ingredient, but not necessarily the main.
Yeah.
The main course, as they say. So, yeah, there's a lot of different types of romance, though. So we're kind of going to do an overview of romance in this episode as best we can. If you're already a romance reader or writer, then I mean, it's super nice of you to still be listening. If you don't know what you're doing for romance, well, that's what we're here.
Thanks for showing up.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
You'll learn with me. Yay.
Yeah, we'll learn together. So yeah, like I said, there's lots of different kinds, and I'm sure there's probably more accurate ways to describe them, but this is how I like to describe romances for me. So there's your bodice-ripper harlequin kind of romances, you know, the old school men with no shirt on the cover with the long Fabio hair. Okay. Got your Regency romance, historical, contemporary, fantasy, dark romance, and depending on which way you're going, like, you can, if you're blending romance with another genre, then you can kind of pick and choose what elements fit. You know, like, if you're writing a fantasy with some romance, like, maybe you're going to get some real Regency romance vibes in it. Depends on your world building, right? So romance as a genre for itself, it has a formula, which we kind of talked about. And there's lots of different variations of the formula. They're all pretty much comes down to the same shit. So they generally go the meet cute, rejection of the potential relationship, giving the relationship a chance, trials and temptations, the I need you but I can't have you because of XYZ, and then the road back together. So the main thing in a romance is there is always a happily ever after. This is what the reader expects when they pick up a romance. And you should deliver on those expectations.
Yeah, if you don't deliver, you're not writing a romance anymore.
Yeah. And that's where you get into if you're blending it. Like, I've written a fantasy romance, and I would still say there's, like, lots of romance in it, but I wouldn't call it a straight romance because it is not a happily ever after. Sorry. So the other thing you see a lot in romance, there's different types of tropes. And so I feel like I could do a whole episode on tropes.
We could. Yeah.
We totally could. So yeah. We won't.
We might, maybe someday, but maybe, not this one.
Maybe next season. Fun. I like this plan. So tropes are there for a reason, because they work. Mm-hmm. So don't be afraid to use them. It's fine. You don't have to try and break the mold.
Right.
The tropes are fun, and I love tropes. So a couple of examples of what I'm talking about are enemies to lovers, friends to lovers, fake dating, marriage of convenience. Favorites. There's a lot of those. Yeah, like rivals to lovers. I love that one too.
The one bed trope, like in a hotel. There's only one bed, but all these two people, they have to share a bed or sleep on the floor. Oh no.
Yes.
That's like, my favorite trope. Oh my goodness.
I do love that one.
Or it's kissing funny. Kissing to get out of a situation. I really love that one.
I love that. That was in an episode of a show I used to be obsessed with, and I remember what I happened. I was like, oh my God. I was so excited because like these characters had all this chemistry. You can just use those tropes,
use them everywhere.
Yep.
I see a lot of the enemies to lovers trope lately. I don't know if you feel the same way, but I feel like I see it in all the reviews, a lot of the books that you and I have been reading over the last couple of months. Huge right now, particularly in the fantasy romance blend, because as we established earlier, that is all I read. Gotta branch out at some point. But if you've read much of my series of the Nymph Keepers, you'll probably notice that enemies to lovers isn't really my thing. When I started writing book one, I thought that was going to be my thing. And then I realized, that would be way too problematic for me. I would find that like an abusive relationship, and I can't do that to my character. So I lean more towards the friends to lovers thing. I find it easier to track. I find enemies to lovers can have this weird boundary where what works is on one side, and then what ends up feeling gross and abusive is on the other. And that's super sketchy, and I don't want to touch it with a 10-foot pole. Mm-hmm. So if you're brave enough and you can make it work, and lots of writers have and do, because we've read so many that have done it really well this year, great, go for it. But I don't think I care enough about the romance threads in my plot to try and make it work, because that would be, I don't know, that just...
It requires a level of commitment to make enemies to lovers work.
That's like a front and center plot thing. So I guess that's another reason why I don't do it. So if you're like me and romance isn't something that you want to have as a main focus, but you still want those love story elements that you'd like to include for your characters because they're fun and they're cute and we love them, I think the best way to think of it, and Maria gave me this idea when we were making notes for this, is a subplot. It's just another subplot. Just like any, you have your main plot, especially in a fantasy world, is probably going to be a big world-saving thing. Most likely, that's most of them. And then you have your subplots of relationships, like maybe the character and one of their parents has an issue and they have to sort that out throughout the book. And that's not the main focus. It may not even have a huge relevance on the main plot throughout the story, but it's there to add extra tension, to add extra interest, and it's just kind of a fun side thing going on to keep things interesting. And I think that's how I prefer to think of romance in my stories when it shows up. So if you're an outliner, just make it easy on yourself. Do a little research on the romance formula if you don't know it already, and then just use that to build your outline and plot out your subplot of romance throughout the story. Focus on those beats. I know I'll have to go through it as I'm writing my books and be like, okay, am I hitting the romance beats or am I just totally making this, you know, not satisfying for the reader, which I'm always a little worried about. So that's a good way if you like to keep things organized that way. But if you're a pantser, you know, you can do it. You can do it. We do it all the time. We'll make it work eventually, right?
I do it. Every book I've written in the last couple of years has just been
for the win. So yeah, don't worry about it. Don't worry about hitting all the beats when it's a subplot. Like, you don't have to follow the formula to the letter, especially you're not writing a romance. So your primary audience is never going to be those romance readers who can spot an issue from 100 pages away. Like, they're going to go to the romance section of the bookstore and pick out their romance books. And if they see yours on a shelf, they might be like, oh, that's interesting, and suggest it to their fantasy friend. You know, don't worry about it. Don't worry about those people. You won't have to please them. So, like, you don't have to worry about having all those touchy-feely scenes or the fade to blacks or gasp writing actual sex scenes. Oh my God. Because your readers aren't coming to you for that. They don't want that from you. That's not why they're here. Thank God. But you do need to try and make the relationship dynamics make sense. Like with any relationship on any scale for any genre. Like if you have two best friends and they have conflict, you got to deal with that. Parents, siblings, even between protagonist and antagonist, you got to figure out their relationship dynamics and how they work together or don't work together, whatever. Romance as a subplot is the same thing. For my part, I try to only have a couple of scenes at most that are focused on the romance aspect strictly. I like to have one or two so that it's like, this is important to these characters. It makes some kind of splash on the overall story, but I don't want to go overboard. So they should have like one or two heart-to-hearts, some sweet touches or moments where their dynamic is really well displayed. Like, how do these two characters mesh together? What shows their chemistry in the best way? Pick the best of the best and discard the rest because, again, your audience is not here to see all of those scenes. That's not what they're there for. So you don't need to worry about sprinkling it in everywhere. And yeah, these can be subtle. The rest of the story is more important. But then I also, as I was thinking about this, I feel like I treat romance kind of how I treat world building. So I like subtlety. I want thin threads woven carefully in with the rest of the plot, the rest of the dialogue, the rest of the story beats, so that as with world building, I'm never doing one big info dump. Or if, for comparison's sake, that would be like a romance straight up sex scene. I'm not going to do that. But yeah, yeah, it like, doesn't belong there at all. And no one's here there. For that. And no one wants that. So I got to be really careful about, you know, how big I make the moment and how much importance I put onto it, because that's not what my audience wants. So a general rule is that I try to use that keeps me mostly on track is to make sure that every scene in my book fulfills several goals at once. So you're not just moving the plot forward with a scene. You also want to be having some character development, raising some tension and stakes, moving some different subplots forward. Like you're meshing more than one thing together. One scene shouldn't be focused on one single thing. So if I want to advance things in my romance subplot department, then I make sure it happens at a natural feeling time. Like you can't, I don't know, if you want to go Pirates of the Caribbean 3 and throw a wedding into the middle of the grand final battle, go ahead. I love that trope, but some people hate it with a passion because, you know, it doesn't really make sense. It doesn't really work. That's not when I would choose to propose and kiss. And yet, no, I'm covered in blood and guts and gore. I am killing gangs. I'm focused on other things right now. I can't feel the warm fuzzies when I'm covered in blood. Okay. So, you know, it's contentious. We can move on. I got off on a tangent there. Whatever.
Yeah. So I have to add to your tangent, which is, again, a popular series that I dislike that shall remain nameless in the podcast because so many people love it. I'm afraid they will call for my head. It's not ACOTAR. I love that one. So this one is like, why would you have a very sexually charged moment with your partner
right
in a life and death scenario? Like, I try and envision my husband it would and never I in that happen situation, and I'm going,
no,
I'm gonna save his ass first, then we're gonna eat and then we're gonna sleep and have a bath and then I will think about it. Like, there's just no, like, I mean, to me that reeks of
right
like, horny teenager. And so in young adult I'm sort of like, okay, well,
maybe I mean,
that's maybe enough, like the right kind of drama for them. But like, mm-hmm. I read like adult fantasy, I'm like, oh, come on. You know that they're way more concerned.
Yeah, they have other things right on now. Their mind. So keep it natural. Yeah, make it make sense. That's what we were trying to say. So it all ties back in.
Keep it natural.
Yes. So when I'm trying to do a subplot, the most important thing is just to keep it realistic, honestly. Like, would they be thinking about this in this moment, or would they be thinking about other things? Because believe it or not, when you're with your husband 24/7, you know, you think about other things together and separately. You really do. I can promise you. I can promise you that. Oh my goodness.
We are old married tea grannies, okay? We're not old, but anyway. We're old at heart.
Feel old. So this, keeping those things in mind, just making sure that, you know, it's happening at a normal time, but you've got other things going on and it's not always the main focus. This helps make sure that your subplots don't bog down the main plot, and then pull readers out of the stuff that they're actually there to read about. So it all comes back to audience, it seems like. Write for your reader. Who's your ideal reader? Focus on that, and everything else will fall into place at some point or another.
So next up for our romance for beginners is the spice scale. Ooh. So this could look different for everybody. I feel like there's maybe going to be some varied opinions, but in our mind, the spice scale is there to determine how much sex is going to be in the story. Yep. So whether there's, even if there's none, you know, there's still going to be some good tension, hopefully, if you're doing your romance, right? That's how it should be. So first on the scale is fade to black. This is where Elise is.
Elise lives here. I had to make sure to get that in there. Yes.
Yes. And fade to black is, there's nothing wrong with fade to black. Like I have had a lot of trouble writing sex scenes. Like I'm slowly getting braver and getting better at it, but fade to black for most things. Second is minimal sex and not very descriptive. So it's somewhere between fade to black and like an actual descriptive scene. And it usually like this will kind of come around in young adults because they're old enough to read a little about sex, but descriptive sex in young adults is usually frowned upon. But this also works in adult romance too. Like not every romance you pick up is going to have a ton of sex in it. There's lots of clean romances out there, which they would fall into these two categories. On the third on the scale is a descriptive sex scene, but vanilla, as they say. And I just want to say that this is common in historical romance. And I've read a lot of historical romance when I went, oh my God, I hope no one is reading this over my shoulder. So it can be done well. I'm not saying that it's boring.
It's just classic.
Classic. Yeah, your classic scene. And then spice level 4 is very descriptive. That's where there gets to be more like dirty talk. There's like introduction to kinks, and these are definitely not the books you're going to lend to your mom or read. Like if you're listening to the audiobook, this is the kind of where you get to the point where you're like, oh my God, I hope my headphones don't suddenly stop working. That level. And 5, the most spice, that's where you get into minimal plot, only sex. And I suppose like erotica, that falls into erotica.
It can be.
But there's also lots of adult romances that are pretty like that, especially like there's some holiday like novellas going around on Instagram and I'm like, oh, that one sounds interesting. And I got like 10 pages in and I was like, holy shit.
They move fast.
That moved a little quick for me. I'm just going to just close that without opening it again. So yeah, there's different levels. And it write what you're comfortable with. Like I know that I will read up to like 4 pretty comfortably, but I can only write. I'm somewhere between 2 and 3.
Yeah. Right now. And for perspective, I'm definitely like, I'm straight up 1. Fade to black is where it's at. If we even get that far, like I might just cut the scene up there. We don't even know if they're going to do it because that's not our information. We don't care.
Yeah, it's not our business. Not our
so business. I live somewhere around there poster. Sometimes. Sometimes, you know, fade to black is, I'm comfortable there, but I'll read up to 4. Yeah. Like,
yeah. Yeah, I think once we get into 5, I'm like, okay, this is...
I'm not here for this.
Yeah, that's... Yeah, it needs... Again, guys, still needs to be character-driven. Character-driven. All right. Which actually gets me to my next point.
Perfect.
What not to do in romance.
Excellent. This is our favorite thing to talk about for everything. What not to do.
I love doing the what not to do. It's like what not to wear. You know, it's so toxic, but yeah. Totally like that. So what not to do, my number one thing, don't skip the tension.
Do not.
That is the best
That's part a candy.
Of reading romance. Yeah, whether it's a subplot or the main plot, you're all there for the anticipation. It's so powerful and you just don't want to skip it. And then when they do get together, just make sure you deliver and draw it out. Like, deliver, you know? And that's the reader's reward for sticking with you. Through the characters' ups and downs, especially if you're in straight romance territory. Like that's the double entendre, climax of the book. And you should, you know, deliver for your reader.
Like I already give said, them what they're there for.
Give them what they want. Give the people what they want.
Give it to them.
Okay. So back to our enemies to lovers. So it is difficult to pull off, and I do agree. But when it's done well, it is just so mm-hmm. good.
There's something about that spice level that's just like, it doesn't even fit into the scale properly. Even if it's all fade to black stuff, like it's still like, wow. That's like...
It's like its own scale, enemies to lovers. It's almost
triple and, pepper heat. Jeez Louise. Exactly.
And one of the reasons it works so well is because of the tension. Mm-hmm. So enemies will obviously have a lot of tension. Yeah. The more incidences they have with each other, the higher the tension gets. So when it evolves into like a sexual romantic tension, it's like so rewarding for the reader because they're like, oh my God. So like, if you guys haven't read A Court of Thorns and Roses, I mean, where have you been?
There's that.
But you got to read it. I think actually the first book is like good. It's the second book.
Right. I remember like you said the second one you like better. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I liked it so much better. So I feel like if you want a really good enemies to lovers, you should read that. Yeah,
that's that is the well done. Classic one to start with.
Classic, yes. But yeah, like Elise said, there's a lot of these stories end up feeling a bit abusive or icky. Mm-hmm. Even one of my recommendations later in the episode is a bit like when it happened, I was like, ooh, that's taking it a bit too far. But I still overall liked it, so I'm still going to recommend it. So tread carefully when you write this. And this is one of those times where having a critique group or beta readers is going to be very helpful for you to know if you're getting that tension right or if there's something kind of gross about it. Which leads me to a trope that I
something
really hate.
Something gross.
Something gross. Protective man and damsel in distress.
Oh, la, la.
Okay, in real life, the only time that works for me is when I can't reach the popcorn and my husband brings it to me. I'm a damsel in distress. Or when I need snow, like, cleaned off my truck.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he's just, you know, that's where I go, babe, you're so much better at it.
Oh.
That's when I pull it. But like, in real, when you're reading a story about it, this only works for me if the damsel in question is also a badass. Mm-hmm. And, like, it kind of goes back and forth. It's just too sexist for me. It's like, yes, you need the big strong man to save you, poor little woman. So I don't, that's why I really hate that one. I mean, there's the other tropes I don't like, but that one I just,
that one's the worst.
I don't like it. Yeah, I don't, that was my least favorite. So give me more feminist romance. And I've got a bunch of recommendations at the end of the episode, but the latest era of contemporary romance has been so much fun because I feel like the feminist themes are much stronger and like more explored and they're just so good. You got to read them. And even in historical romance, there's an author that does feminism and historical romance really well. And it's Evie Dunmore. And her books focus on like women trying to get the vote in like England and like 1800s. And like, it's just awesome. It's awesome. There's lots of romance in it still, but you know, she doesn't neglect the social issues, which is super awesome. Cool. Yeah. And that is my next point. Speaking of feminism, don't be a sexist pig. Don't do it. If you get feedback on your writing in any genre that accuses you of being sexist, take a step back and look at it and leave your defensive emotions at the door. Because even if you're doing your best, sometimes things slip through the cracks. And like we all do it and we're all trying to be better. So just use those moments to better your knowledge and your understanding and don't take it as a personal attack.
Yeah. And I think that's key. Like it's not a personal thing. Your intentions may have been the complete opposite, but someone read it that way. And there might be something you can tweak and just a small thing you can change to like clarify, no, this is the direction that I was trying to go. That's an important one. If someone says something came across as sexist and that's not your intention, like if you're intending to write a character who is sexist and that's how it's coming across, well, you know,
then by all means, exactly.
But if that's
people will hate him and it'll be
if
great
that's not them. What you want, if that's not what you want, then definitely listen to your feedback, listen to your beta readers, and just be as open as possible. And don't take it personally.
And- And if you want to have a good laugh, I can't remember their handle on TikTok, but I'm sure you can find it. Someone reads men writing women.
Oh, you've sent me those.
And yes, and they are so bad that first of all, you will laugh and then you will wonder, how did this get published? Yeah. How? Mm-hmm. And then you'll kind of wonder, you know, what the poor women in that guy's life must be.
So equal parts hilarious, but also kind of depressing. Just yeah, so also you depressing. Know.
So just be ready. But it is definitely worth watching.
Yeah, we'll try and find the handle and put it in the description after.
Yeah.
Yeah, but back to what not to do, because you can definitely go watch those TikToks. But what not to do, I mean, that might be good romance research of what not to do, so it still fits. I'd recommend avoiding elements that you put in just for shock value. And I think writers tend to throw in graphic and dramatic things just to wow people, just to make a splash, to make things interesting, to, you know, have an effect on the reader. And I would hesitate strongly to go that route. Like, if you're going to do something big and dramatic and shocking, it's got to have a really good reason to be there. It's got to make sense. Everything needs to make sense and come in naturally. If you're just going to use the graphic or intense, if you're going to use the graphic or intense themes anyways, trigger warnings can be really important. Mm-hmm. So that's where we get into this. So these are often contentious in many, many circles, whether you're talking about fiction or at school or whatever it is. Like, people debate about this until they'll keep debating until the world has ended. Some people swear by them. Some people think that they're just, you know, useless or cushy or whatever it is that they don't like about it. But in marketing, which is what you're going to have to do if you ever get published in any way, shape, or form, they can be especially helpful to make sure that you're reaching the exact audience that you want, which is crucial for book sales. So, you know, don't just throw these out. So unless you're writing something like a dark romance or a dark fantasy where people are expecting things to get graphic and gritty and kind of gross, you're going to want to be careful. And trigger warnings help you do this. They help you ensure that you don't leave your reader with a bad taste in their mouth. So in psychology, we often talk about how a single negative interaction with relationships, especially like with your spouse or your partner or whatever, if you have a negative interaction with them one day, you could have had 3 or 4 positive ones up until that point in the morning, and then at lunchtime something happens and you're just not happy. That will overshadow every positive thing that happened the rest of the day. Like, that's the human brain remembers negative feelings and reactions way more easily, way more strongly. So if you're going to include something big and graphic and kind of nasty, like rape or abuse, or whether that's physical or emotional or otherwise, or other triggering behavior, anything that's, you know, just intense, and you're writing a fluffy Hallmark romance novel style, the only thing that your readers will remember is how you trick them into reading something awful. And they'll probably leave you terrible reviews online so that other people don't make the same mistake, because now you haven't given them what they wanted. And maybe you're like, haha, I got them to read it anyway, but that's not really points in your favor or theirs. No one's happy at the end of the day, because, you know, it's not going to help you sell more. It's not going to help them read more. And you could potentially hurt somebody. So, you know, It's worth thinking about. It's worth paying attention to. And trigger warnings can help warn these readers that, hey, this element may not be what you're expecting from this style of writing, this genre. Or if you're someone who has published other books before and now you're kind of branching out, that can be a good signal to your previously established reader base that, hey, if you're into this but you're not into this, be careful of this one book. You might like the rest of the book, but there is an element of this that you might not like. Like, it's just hey, this element might not be for you. So if you're looking to avoid this at this time, maybe don't read this book. Come back to it later if you want. But I'd say that the basic rule with trigger warnings, use your common sense. If you're writing a dark fantasy, like I said, grimdark or a dark romance, you probably don't need trigger warnings for gore or violence, because that's what's supposed to be in those books. So people go into those books expecting it. But if you're writing a nice YA fantasy about world-hopping teenagers and it's just kind of fluffy and light, and all of a sudden, wham, a character starts delving into suicidal ideation, or someone is the victim of rape, you're going to get thrown to the wolves, not only by your surprised readers, but by librarians looking out for the minors of the world. They will tear you to shreds, guaranteed. You won't get into schools. You won't get into libraries. That would be, you know, that's a big minus. So slap on that trigger warning and save yourself a lot of heartbreak. Just do some of the work ahead of time and it'll save you in the long run. And then another thing to watch out for is if you're finding that you're having to include a lot of trigger warnings because you're looking at your work and seeing that, oh, these elements aren't typically in this genre. I guess I should throw in a warning for that and a warning for that. And you find yourself with a handful, or that happens every time, that may be a really good indication that you're not writing in the right genre, or you've mislabeled your book in the wrong genre. So yeah, that can be a helpful exercise in figuring out where you fit and who you're trying to target. It helps you like figure out who your target audience is. So it's just a really helpful thing to think about all around.
Yeah, and unless you're writing like dark fantasy, dark romance, please don't use rape as a plot device.
Yep.
Like I've seen it so much and it's an immediate like one star for me. Mm-hmm. Like I read a lot of Game of Thrones. I think I was in like book 4 or 5 or something before I called it. And I just couldn't get over it, like how much rape was in it. Yeah. And then there's always men in the comments on the internet going, well, they're being realistic. Can we not? Mm. You know, it's a real issue in the world. And a lot of us don't want to read about it in fiction as well. Okay. Yeah. So, and I noticed, it makes me crazy. And I see books and I'm like, oh my gosh. And then also sometimes like there's another really popular book out right now that I actually bought, was really excited to read. And then I read someone's review of it and it has like rape of underage like people in it. And I was like, oh, and people are raving about this book and saying how wonderful it is, but people just skate right over that. So yeah, and I didn't see a trigger warning for that. Mm-hmm. Like, what? So now it's sitting on my shelf and I spent money on it and I'm not even sure if I'll read it now.
Yeah, so, trigger warnings are important.
And again, with the whole genre thing, I feel like we've harped on that a bit last episode and this episode too. Make sure you're in the right genre.
Yeah.
You know, so if you're writing a fluff, like Elise said, if you're writing a fluffy romance, don't go throwing in something like that because people aren't expecting it and they don't want to read it.
They're not there for that. And that's
they're not there
like
for that.
With the psychology thing, that's the thing that they're going to remember the most is what they didn't like about it.
Yeah, that's what I remember most about Game of Thrones. And when people are like, why don't you watch this show? It seems like something you'd really like. I'm like, well, you know, I just really don't like seeing people get raped.
Haha.
I'm not sure why that's controversial, but I just really don't like it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to watch it. Sorry.
But to be fair, Game of Thrones is labeled as grimdark, I believe. So it doesn't need a trigger warning because like that's what you're in for. Warning. And if that's not for you, that's not for you. Like you're not the target audience. Right? I'm not the target audience. Exactly. I would love every other thing about that series. But because of what I've heard of what you're saying already, I haven't taken it in because I know it would bug me too much.
Yeah. Yeah. And in anything where the dog dies. Oh. Anyways. So another warning, but that's I feel like there should be a trigger warning for that too, so I don't go get my heart broke. So struggles with writing romance. This is kind of a funny one because I couldn't write romance at all. I had no idea what I was doing. And I really, really struggled with it. I did not even know where to start with romance. And I really wanted to add it to my fantasy, my first book that I wrote. And I was so overwhelmed, confused about how to do it. So reading romance, I mean, I feel like this is such our usual advice.
Go read.
Read it. Go read. But that is the biggest thing, I think, when you're trying to add some romance into your story or you want to write a romance because, you know, you've got the idea, but you just don't know how to execute it yet. That's read. Definitely read. And some other good advice I received was to think back on the early days of my relationship with my husband and how I felt. And that was helpful. Of course, we've been together for like 15 years, so I have probably a faulty memory think that far back. And if you're not in a long-term relationship, a good substitute for trying to get that like first meeting, like butterflies feelings, is like picture how you feel if you met your ultimate celebrity crush. That would definitely help you pin down the nerves and the feeling and the vibe.
Yep. Or your favorite book crush or, you know.
Yep. Any of those. And if you're writing a more mature relationship or trying to develop a new one, so consider that intimacy comes with knowing someone well. Mm-hmm. So this can apply to friends and family too. It's not just romantic relationships. So things like knowing how they take their tea, like what mm-hmm. does their fake nice behavior look like, you know, what calms them down when they're upset. And writing intimacy is the key to good romance, because sex is only one component. So like, just because two characters have a sexual relationship doesn't mean you've convinced the reader of like their love and affection. Yeah. It's just one component. So, you know, this is where people get a little funny when they're like, I don't like romance. It's all about sex. Well, that's not really what it boils mm-hmm. down to. And that's not the real appeal of the mm-hmm. genre and why we love to read it, right? Like, who doesn't love a good romance, right? So one of the other things I love to see in romance, and I recommend that you work on this too as a writer, is the banter. So you need some banter, you need some laughs. People aren't going to be interested in a romantic relationship that doesn't make the characters happy and doesn't make you happy as a reader. So it's kind of nice. I've gotten some nice feedback on my own writing about this, where people are like, oh, I love the banter between them. Well, like that's awesome. Like that's such a good thing to be good at that I didn't know I was good at until someone told me.
Yeah. Cause that's crucial. That's like,
it's huge. And you know, all you have to do is hang out with someone who's really comfortable with their partner and you'll see it, you know, like hang out with your married friends, or if your parents have a good marriage, like anything that, and just watch some of the stuff that they do. It's so subtle. Like they have conversations without speaking.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. And that's the kind of things that can really drive home the character's connection. And, you know, we do it when we write friendships, we do it. Right. And when you write even enemies, same thing. But when you do it for romance, it does have an added layer of like intimacy that you gotta get it in there.
There's another layer of closeness that has to be touched on for it to all come together. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And speaking of struggling with writing romance, like we've established, it's not my thing. It's not my genre. That's not where I spend the most of my time. But I once read this review. I'm sorry, I don't remember what book it was for, who wrote the book, who wrote the review, where I saw it. It was on the internet somewhere, so good luck. But the reviewer was commenting that throughout the main love story in the book they were reading, the love interests only like they held hands a couple of times, or maybe they like one of them touched the other person's cheek one time, and it was a really touching moment. And like, despite not having very many of those touchy-feely moments, it was probably the most romantic and beautiful relationship they had read and experienced in a very long, long time. And I was so struck by this description of how they experienced reading this relationship that ever since then I've taken it as a kind of a challenge. And maybe that's why I just never dove into writing explicit romance books with sex in them, because I want to make my characters show their closeness in other ways. I want to see how far I can take that relationship and show it without having to have those physically intimate moments. So if you think about it, human beings show each other love in so many other ways, like in what we say to each other, what we do for each other, but then in how we tell other people about the people that we love and how we talk about them when they're not around, or in how we think about them. Like that's something only you can know, but this can be especially powerful in a first person narrative where we are inside the person's head and we get to see exactly how they think about everybody, and how they think about the person that they think they're in love with is going to be really, really telling. Or if you're bouncing back and forth between two love interests and you get to see how they think about each other and the contrast of that and whether they're aligned or not, and that gives you a whole bunch of insight into how that relationship works or doesn't, or why it does or doesn't, and all of that. Like, we have direct contact with our characters' minds, so using that to show love and romance is bound to be like a home run most of the time if you do it well. But just think about how we look at each other when we think no one's watching, or when you're just so enamored that you forget that everyone can see you. But like every once in a while, yeah. I catch myself, I'm staring at my husband, like we're sitting in the living room reading books side by side or whatever. And I just, you know, I get in a daze.
Dream relationship.
Yeah, just look up. Goals. Well, we're doing something as simple as reading. No one's talking. Nothing is happening. We're not even touching. He's in his chair. I'm on the couch, whatever. And I just get this smile, and I can't fight it down. Like if I'm in public, then people are going to see that I'm smiling for no reason at all. Because I just, you know, I feel so in love with him in the moment. Like I just have to look at his face, at the way he holds his mouth when he's thinking about something, or the way he's holding the book and how comfy he looks in the chair, or his hair is tousled just a little bit and looks a little funny, and it makes me laugh. And I get the warm fuzzies. I'm just sitting there staring at a man reading a book, like,
which is such a sexy
right?
thing. You should all put that in your novel.
Goals.
That's what we want to
but
see.
If I was sitting on a train staring at some rando reading a book, he might have a nice beard. Sure, I might think that he looks nice in wherever he's sitting, and mm-hmm. and find that, you know, a attractive visual picture, but it's not the same as when I'm sitting there staring at this person that I have a history with, and that just by looking at them and thinking about them, I have these feelings that are just there based on other feelings from the past and moments that have happened far away or nearby or whatever. But that's romance. That's intimacy. I'm not even touching him and I can feel it. And we can write our characters mm-hmm. to experience that as well. Another one that I've been really intrigued by is if you know a couple in your life who doesn't seem to show physical closeness, but who are, you know, intimate and together, you can usually get a sense of that. I mean, to an extent, we can't know everything because we don't live with them. But mm-hmm. if you know a couple who, like, you've just kind of had this vibe that they don't really do the physical touch thing in public. Maybe they just don't like PDA, whatever. Mm-hmm. Pay attention when you hang out with them and watch and listen and see if you can see what does bond them other than physicality. Like, how do they show love to each other if it's not through physical touch? Because some people they're not touchy-feely. They just don't love the whole hands all over. Yeah. They don't like hugs, whatever it is. Like, it's just not their thing. And that's fine. There's other ways of loving each other. And I really like to look out for those in my characters, because I find it just rounds them out so much more. Like, it forces people to realize that romance is not just about sex.
Yes.
And just to add in all of the other things that make relationships interesting. So this also makes it really easy to show intimacy without needing to become comfortable writing or reading sex scenes. Yay! I've given you an out. You're welcome. Because I'm not interested in doing that. And I mean, I still like reading about and writing about people falling in love and falling out of love mm-hmm. and the process of that. So how can I show those things happening outside of the bedroom? Well, I've got to do my research. And a lot of research just comes from living and reading and watching movies and engaging in stories and seeing how humans exist together. So I feel like that was just mm-hmm. a really beautiful thing to say. And now I'm getting all the warm fuzzies just from this conversation.
Me too, because I actually had someone tell me that my husband and I were like more like siblings
than
romantic. And I was like, at the time, I was like a little offended.
Excuse me. What? No incest, and then, please.
Yeah, and then, you know, then it kind of came to me like later. I actually took it upon myself to observe that person's relationship because I was like, I wonder why they think that about us, kind of thing. And it was because they had a very cold relationship. Mm. And like, that can work, maybe. It didn't end up working. Mm. But like, for us, like, we're very chatty and like silly, and there's a lot of banter. Yeah. And like, that's kind of how we are. We're not a very touchy couple. Like, we'll maybe hold hands in public, like maybe mm-hmm. like we're not big on like PDA. Mm-hmm. I'm just like not comfortable with it at all. Yeah. Like, we actually had to practice our kiss at our wedding because we were like, what if we mess it up?
That was so cute.
So we had to practice, which was, now that I'm saying it out loud, sounds super embarrassing.
That's so cute. That is the most adorable thing I've ever heard.
And you know what? The pictures of our first kiss are really great. So I think it was worth the practice. Well, our first kiss is a miracle. And so something like every couple is different, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And like, you know, for example, I'm going to like throw my parents in the mix again because they're hilarious. And my dad will say stuff to just rile my mom up, like just absolute bullshit. And she'll be like, and he's sitting there just big grin on his face. Like that's, he loves her more in that moment than any other time. That's his favorite. Yep. That's how they show affection.
That sounds, that's what they do. That sounds like one of my grandparents' relationships is very much like that. It's just, you go to family dinner to listen to them banter because that's the best part of the day. And so apparently cute. My husband and I are like that, apparently.
Yeah. It's a compliment when you're like that. Mm-hmm. I think it shows how comfortable you are with each other.
All the teasing. And that's, and you don't get offended. Yeah. Like, you know that it's meant in a loving way, and you, it's not about mm-hmm. getting mad. It's just, it's mm-hmm. good fun.
Exactly. It's all in good fun, right? And that's something that I like to see in books too, because I just, mm-hmm. sometimes I find romances tend to focus on the struggles of the couple, maybe a little too mm-hmm. much. And I'm like, well, yeah, like every couple has struggles. But I think we need those moments that sell us on their relationship, mm-hmm. that sells it like on they're going to make it because of this, right? And so I think it's important to really be aware of that. Like body language is huge mm-hmm. when you're writing like any kind of romance. Yeah. Like the body language is absolutely huge. Yeah. Like, especially since COVID, I've noticed how little I actually like to be touched by like other people. But like, obviously my husband can touch me comfortably, mm-hmm. but like if I run into an acquaintance and they go for a hug, I'm like, whoa,
whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa, whoa.
No. Yeah. So it's a little bit, it's a full answer, mm-hmm. whatever. Mm-hmm. And so that's something to consider too. Like some people just don't like to really be touched. So yeah, take into account what I'm getting at. Sorry, I went on such a tangent there. What I'm getting at is what, depending on what your character is like, they will express their affection in different ways. So if you have a very introverted, very quiet character, they're probably not going to show their affection by banter.
And they're not going to want a big, like, public expression of love from their partner.
Oh my gosh, yes.
They're not gonna respond well to that.
Like proposing on the football field type of thing. I'm like, who likes that?
That sounds like a horror story to me.
Mm-hmm. That's, I would just be like, oh babe, no. Mm-hmm.
Bye bye. You don't know me at all, do you?
Yeah, you don't know me at all. Oh my gosh, exactly. And so that's something else to think about as well. Because sometimes those like big romantic gestures go over better in like a book than they would in real life. But I still think you gotta,
because you can smooth them out and get all rid of all of the kinks and stuff and then just have it go perfectly. Exactly. But that rarely happens in real life. So your characters have to be comfortable with, you know, winging it and having things go not their way for that to work out. I was reading a webcomic couple months ago, probably, like this was a while back, and it's a young adult thing. It's a cute little romance between these high schoolers. It's really adorable and I love it. But it's kind of going between these three different love interests. Wow, there's more than a triangle there. Wow. It's very clean, very wholesome. So I was reading about, she goes on a date with one of them and he's been her friend forever and they have really great banter and they've got this really like sweet teasing relationship where they just bug each other all the time. They just have a lot of fun together all the time. They're great friends. And then they decide that they want to, you know, shoot to see if they can make something more of it. But one of the other love interests is more of like, I'll bring you roses and I'm just kind of cool and popular and I'm going to be like the guy that everyone wants and I'll take you on this fancy date and we'll have all the right things and it'll be, and then kiss at the, like, right? All of those fancy typical classic romantic gestures that make dating desirable, I guess. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And there was a comment at the end of this episode that I was reading about the date with the happy-go-lucky teasing friend. And they're like, yeah, that's more like a sibling relationship and I wouldn't want my partner to be like that because that's not what you want in a romantic partner ever. Like no one would want that kind of thing. And I'm like, that relationship is just like my husband's, and it's perfect, and I would want nothing else. And if I was to date the other guy, I dated someone like that once, and I couldn't handle it. I didn't like those gestures, give me roses. Nope. I turn red as roses, and then I just want to hide, and it's uncomfortable for everyone. And then the roses are dead, so they go and die more in my house, and I'm supposed to give them water for no reason. And like, why would you do that? Give me chocolate and tea and leave me alone for 5 hours, and I'll love you forever.
Yeah.
So everyone's different. And you can't treat them all the same, and different love interests will want different things from their partner. And you have to be, you know, keep it natural, make it make sense.
Exactly. Yeah. I couldn't do all those big gestures. Mm-hmm. They feel insincere. And when I read about them, they feel insincere too.
Yeah.
Like when the love interest is like doing the flowers and the fancy dinner and the black Amex card, it kind of feels like he's setting her up for emotionally or financially abusive relationship. Ooh, yeah. It never seems to like land well with me, because I'm like, what are you, her dad? Yeah. Like, it's so weird.
You're trying to buy me off? Come on.
Yeah. Like, that's a no for me. Wow, we got slightly.
Off.
Well, no, we're
still talking about romance.
We just kind of went to it. Yeah, we're still talking about it. It's totally legit. But, you know, before we run out of time, we've got to get to our recommendations. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't usually do book recommendations in our episodes. I wonder if we should start for certain ones, but
I'm down.
We have a lot.
be prepared.
If you follow us on Instagram, then you probably have already seen my reviews and photos of a lot of these, and hopefully you've already added them to your to-be-read list, because they're amazing. So one of my favorite contemporary romances that I've read in the last year are It Happened One Summer by Tessa Bailey, The Bromance Book Club series by Lissa K. Adams. That one was super feminist and hilarious. The Flatshare and The Switch by Beth O'Leary were both pleasantly surprising, and I loved them very much. Very sweet and pretty clean, those two.
Okay.
Just so you know. The other one's
important distinction.
And for fantasy romance, the most obvious one, which is a damn fun series, is A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas.
Yep.
So that's a classic. If you haven't read it, you should. Don't waste any more time. Read it right now. I also loved Caravel by Stephanie Garber.
I love that one.
And The Savage and the Swan by Ella Fields. So that was one where the enemies to lovers went a little, I was like,
whoa. A little dark,
but it worked. It was well done. Okay. I thought it was cool. And it has a lot of like fairy tale elements to it. So I quite enjoyed that one. I'm a big fan of Regency romance. So my historical romance recommendations, there's a new author I started reading. Her name is Harper St. George, and she wrote two books. The series is called The Gilded Age Heiresses, and they were fantastic. The Bridgerton series by Julia Quinn is great. And yes, there is a show on Netflix, and season 2 comes out in March. And I'm so excited. Woo. There's also the Wallflower series by Lisa Claypass, who she is amazing. Like, all of her books are amazing, but I particularly like that series. And then another one that I can't stop recommending, which I'm not even sure what I would totally call this. It's like kind of like literary fiction romance. Okay. I'm not sure. The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid. If you've already read a book by her, then you've probably already bought this one and you should read it immediately. I was crying when I finished, and I was like, I don't think I'll ever be the same. Oh. So it was a good one. Okay. I recommend
that. Yeah, you've recommended that one to me more than once.
Yeah. I just lent it to my mom and I was like, read it now. So now I gotta bug her to make sure she actually reads it soon, because I got a lot of people that want to borrow
read it now so Elise can read it. Jeez.
Exactly. I can lend it out. But yeah, there's also way more. Honestly, you should follow us on Instagram for more book recommendations, because we do book reviews every week up there, so you can check us out there. And Elise has some pretty awesome recommendations.
Yes. And before I get into them, I was just going to say, you can also follow, you can follow me, possibly Maria as well, on Goodreads. And then you can kind of see what we're reading. And if you like some of the same stuff, chances are you'll like whatever we like. So
don't judge us. I did read Ice Planet Barbarians and I loved it.
So
I'm not sorry.
So maybe I'll put my link to my Goodreads, but we'll keep Maria as a secret.
If you can spell my name and find me, you can
call me. Good luck to you. That will be a test of courage. But anyways, if you don't like or don't want main plot romance, maybe you want to branch out, maybe that's just not your thing, but you like having those warm fuzzies along with some of the main plot, like I do, I have a few for you. So in the realm of fantasy, because of the books that I read, that's like 99% of them. My favorite read of the year was City of Brass by S.A. Chakraborty. There is some romance just kind of woven through the trilogy, and it's done really, really well, but it's never the main feature. It's more about the fantasy elements, the world building, and all of those things. So that's a good one. I just read The Queen of the Tierling by Erica Johansson this past week, which that's just like the main thing is it's a fantasy book. Like you're getting your swords and your queens and kings and knights and fights, and it's really fun. And romance is not the main focus at all. Six of Crows by Leigh Bardugo. I found the romance was very understated and subtle. My Nymph Keeper series, book one and two are out. Shameless plug. But yeah, the romance is never the main thing, like I've said. So you can safely get, you know, at most a fade to black. I don't know if there's even any of those in there. So you'll be safe. The House in the Cerulean Sea by T.J. Klune was, oh my goodness, beautiful. My heart. Every time I think of it, I just kind of want to cry and laugh at the same time. It's so cute. Mm-hmm. Mexican Gothic by Silvia Moreno Garcia is also very good, subtle romance. I don't know if romance is even much of a feature at all in that one. So, you know.
I haven't read that one yet. I read Gods of Jade and Shadow, okay. Which has
that's like, a romance
like thread. Romance mm-hmm. elements. Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Yeah, Mexican Gothic is focused on other things for sure. The Thief by Megan Whalen Turner. And then pretty much any series by, here he is, Brandon Sanderson. I'm pretty sure I recommend him for everything, which is probably
and
cheating.
I still haven't read a single one of his books.
It's okay.
I'm the worst friend.
He doesn't do the romance the way you like it. So Brandon Sanderson, he does a really good job of teasing love stories, like implying them or adding hints about them or like showing that, yes, these people are in love and love each other and you get the warm fuzzies, but he doesn't actually focus on them very much. And I'm especially enjoying how he's doing this in his Skyward series right now. It's a young adult sci-fi. So that's one of my non-fantasy books that I've finally branched out into this year. You can praise me. It's a trilogy, so I've read three. Oh, look at me go.
I'm very tired.
And then, I mean, aside from that, I've been reading a lot of the same books as Mariah these days, so there's more of a heavy romance focus. Not that I'm complaining at all, but lots of my other favorite recommendations are a bit older, and if you haven't read them yet, they're 100% worth checking out anyways. Tamora Pierce, I think several of her series would be good for this kind of thing, but her Alana series specifically, I enjoyed as a young adult. I'm still a young adult. I enjoyed as a teenager. Let's go back a little bit. The Book Thief by Marcus Zusak is one of my favorite books of all time, and there's kind of some
fantastic
undertones book. Of romance, but this is not a main focus at all, and it's amazing. The Chronicles of Narnia, minor romance elements occasionally, but really not in there all that much at all. Howl's Moving Castle, there is a love story, but it is not the primary focus, and it's just kind of it's written for middle grade, but I find it just a warm, heartwarming, wonderful, if I want to feel good about myself and life, I read this book.
Okay, I need to read
yes.
that, because I need to feel good about myself and life right
it's
now.
It's super cute. It's just so much fun. The magic is hilarious. And then The Goose Girl by Shannon Hale, and there's four books in that series. It's called the Books of Bayern series. The Goose Girl is the first one. My favorite is the fourth one, which is called Forestborn. If you read it, you'll probably understand me. So it's one of my favorite series of all times. It's incredible. It's adorable. The romance in the first one is maybe more of a main feature, and then in the other three books, it's not as much of a big deal. But that's it. I could go on and on and on about books.
I have one more. Another.
We see.
The Graceling.
That's a good one.
For like, it has romance, but it's not the main plot. But it's super well done. So that's also just a fun.
Perfect.
Book,
I'm glad that one made it the cut. Yes.
Yes. Oh, it makes the cut for many, many days. All right. And that's the tea on romance for beginners. So don't forget to rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. You can follow us on Instagram at the Tea Grannies Podcast or on Twitter at the Tea Grannies. Join us next time for a chat with our favorite young adult author, Eileen Cook. And she's the author of You Owe Me a Murder and With Malice, both of which you need to read immediately. So we'll see you guys then. Happy writing.